Hello and welcome to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. If you enjoy our podcasts, please tell your colleagues and subscribe on iTunes and Spotify. Enjoy.
Hi, welcome to the fourth of these COVID catch-ups. There's been quite a lot happening in the blogosphere over the last week. For the communications section, I'd like to draw your attention to a blog post in BMJ Opinion by Laura Rock, Don't Answer Feelings with Facts. It's one of these articles that you kind of might see, might skim read and think, that's not really for me. It's all about how we have this instinct when someone comes up to you and may well be complaining about something, distraught about something, wanting to raise some form of concern. And often your instinct to counter emotion is to give a piece of factual information. So the example that Laura gives, patient says, "I'm scared about having this procedure. I'm having second thoughts." So the doctor goes, "Don't worry, your surgeon does 400 of these a year. You're in good hands." Or the trainee says, "I'm stressed. I'm not keeping up with the reading. It's overwhelming." And the supervisor says, "Don't worry, you'll be fine. It's impossible to read everything." And while at first glance these may seem like appropriately empathetic answers, if we really think about what we're doing, is we often don't acknowledge the actual concern or emotion that the person has. And there is evidence that kind of shutting down some of this emotion actually produces some very tangible negative responses. And for example, for the patient, you could answer with, "I hear that you're scared. It's normal to be scared. This is a big procedure. What worries you the most?" And perhaps for the trainee, I hear you say you're stressed and it's overwhelming. That is hard. And most of us do feel stressed sometimes. Do you want to talk about it? And that these are subtly different answers, but I think they are actually quite important. And Laura's article kind of reads very fluidly, and it's quite a powerful argument, I think, for taking a bit of time to reflect on the way that we deal with things. And this is really important during the COVID pandemic, because there is a great deal of anxiety and justifiable concern out there. And if we dismiss people with medical logic, we might not actually be getting to the nub of the issue. So Laura recommends that you give when you notice emotion. So get that it's an emotion, identify that emotion, validate, so acknowledge the feelings of the person and explore those emotions to understand them better. But I'll leave you to read the article. I think it's really good. And another article on the organisational theme was from Miriam Feingolden, a paediatric intensive care clinician in London, who does another article in BMJ Opinion called "We Can Do This, I Have Faith in Us." And it's talking about, despite all of the challenges and deep misery that some people are facing, the healthcare settings and actually the public are responding really well. And while suffering is universal, Edith Eger reminds us, victimhood is optional. And I think it is really important that as a collective, whether it's your small team in your department or your department as a whole or as your organisation, you do acknowledge the things that you are doing and that you can be doing to improve things. But that doesn't diminish the fact that this is really challenging. And Miriam finishes with a George Bernard Shaw quote that both optimists and pessimists contribute to society. The optimist invents the aeroplane and the pessimist the parachute. And she concludes that actually most of us at the moment need all of the aeroplanes but all of the parachutes that we can muster. This is a two-sided affair, and we must acknowledge the challenges that are happening but also the things that we are doing to improve things. In regard to vital signs, I was hoping that this was going to be an interesting topic of debate each week, but once again, that there is minimal new in the paediatric literature that helps us really understand the impact of COVID in children and young people. We know that there continue to be concerns about delays in presentations, and please do look out for some collaborative work that's coming from the RCPCH, NHS England and Perucci in the very near future about perhaps doing a surveillance study of where doctors have acknowledged that there may be issues in the time that is taken some families and carers to get to hospital, whatever the reason that that may have been. In relation to interventions, I mentioned last week about the challenge of communicating in a busy resuscitation room where there are a lot of people and there's a lot of noise when you're wearing full PPE, and that your mask and visor and all the other paraphernalia may be drowning out your colleagues' comments. And how do we best communicate in these situations? There has been a bit of discussion about this online and on Twitter, and reading through a thread started by Kylie Moon, I've been suggesting kind of baby monitor type devices, although that the background noise for those has been thought to be an issue. Using walkie-talkies has been used quite successfully, and a number of people using dry erase markers, both on the inside and the outside of a room. Something that we've tried in our unit, being piloted by Professor Tim Coates, is using some Bluetooth headset devices whereby the whole team can hear what is being said through an individual earpiece and a microphone. And there's been some good positive feedback about that so far. So I think we'll look out for the development of that over the next couple of weeks. I haven't seen anyone really do a standout piece of work on this yet, so please do let me know if you've managed to solve this problem in your particular organisation. And finally, a bit about dilemmas. So last week I was talking about some of the challenges of resuscitating a child who's had a likely respiratory collapse or collapse for any reason and does need cardiopulmonary resuscitation. And the Public Health England have decided that full PPE isn't needed for chest compressions, but is needed for bag and mask ventilation, so that if a child did collapse, you could apply some oxygen and someone could start chest compressions until another person became suited up to be able to apply bag and mask ventilation. Whereas the Rhesus Council were saying that full PPE needs to be worn for all parts of CPR. Now, I had thought that the two organisations were going to get together and reach mutual consensus, but sadly this hasn't occurred. And the Rhesus Council have strengthened their statement, saying they really do believe that the evidence suggests that chest compressions can be an aerosol-generating procedure. So this does create a moral challenge, I think, for organisations, because they need to determine what their staff do in these difficult situations. And I think most staff will have difficulty enough not donning full PPE if they see a child who needs ventilatory support, because that is the instinct for all of us who work in paediatrics and child health. So there is more debate and discussion to be had around this. My personal feeling is that by the time that someone has got into PPE, I think the delay in doing that is actually less than it was a couple of weeks ago, because hopefully people are more practiced, they're more slick, they've got a system in their department for having easier access to both the equipment and, or perhaps people already wearing the equipment. So just starting chest compressions for a small period of time may not always be in a child's interest. So we'll watch this space and we'll see, I'm sure, more evidence coming out about this, hopefully, but more importantly, maybe some more joined up thinking. So thanks again for listening, and please do send kind of comments and queries in. I'm very happy to get discussions going about anything related to COVID-19 and how it's affecting you. Many thanks for listening.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. Remember, you can subscribe to our feed on iTunes and Spotify. Thank you for listening.